Fragrant flowers. That's nice. Okay. Fragrant oils, fragrant flowers. Okay. And I had other things I was going to talk about. I was waiting for you to come tonight. That's why I was waiting for you. So, okay, let's start out with that. Well, oils, I mean, oils Prabhupada used, of course, was for massage. And he used sandalwood oil on his head and mustard oil for the body. Mustard oil is heating. And sandalwood oil is cooling, as a cooling thing. Prabhupada always said to keep a cool head. In fact, Prabhupada once said to me in Calcutta, he said that the sannyasis, he said they should have stamped on their forehead, keep in a cool place. He said, just like the box of butter. The box of butter says keep in a cool place. And Prabhupada said the sannyasis should stamp on their forehead because they were butter. Sannyasis were like butter, which meant to stay away from, not associate with women at all. Because women were fire, and men were butter, but in particular sannyasis. I was saying that how even when he was with his sister, Prabhupada called me into the room and said, "You sit here." He said, "Even she's my sister." He said, "I can't be alone." So Prabhupada kept, and he did that a few times where he would call. And sometimes there would be devotees in the room, and then this one would leave, that one would leave, and then all of a sudden there was just Prabhupada, and there would be female devotee, and he would ring his bell and say, "Sit down." So however long anything was going on, he would say, "You have to sit here with this sannyasi." But the sandalwood oil, of course, was Mysore sandalwood oil, which is now very, very expensive. Then it was expensive back in 1970 when we were getting it. And you would only get it in India, and it was from Mysore sandalwood oil, which they still sell. But it's very difficult to get pure. But the thing that was so wonderful, when you do get it, just like, you know, anything you smell, your strongest senses are sense of smell is very, very strong in your hearing. And when you hear, it's like if you hear certain music, when you get older, you see, like if you hear a song that you heard back in 1980 or something, a song 1970, it can bring you right to that place because music has that ability, it has a very strong effect. And so does smells. And I know now, whenever, as soon as I smell sandalwood, not very often, nobody has good sandalwood anywhere. When they offer to the deities all these different oils and you smell, you don't smell sandalwood like you would smell Mysore sandalwood from 30, 40 years ago. It's very difficult to get. But if ever you do, if ever I do, as soon as I smell it, I just think of Prabhupada immediately. Because Prabhupada always smelled of sandalwood oil, because every day he would use the sandalwood oil, rub sandalwood oil on his head. So it was a very nice smell. And once, and I was going to talk about Siddhasroop Ananda, his name was Siddhasroop Ananda Goswami, and he was from Hawaii. I don't like this ring on my back. And
open the windows, Prabhu. Okay, then maybe you can move the asana.
Yeah,
move the asana.
Just too much on my back.
If you want, I can put the other air conditioner on.
No, that is on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just move the asana. This side to the right, yeah. That's good right there. Turn it back on.
So, Prabhupada got a very big container of Mysore sandalwood oil, and he presented it to Prabhupada, so he was very happy because that was the best oil with Mysore sandalwood. And he gave it to Prabhupada right when I was about to massage him. And he said to Prabhupada, you know, he said, like I say, usually you just get these little bottles, but it would go a long way. You would just put a little, half a teaspoon in your hand, and every day that's what I would do. But so he had gotten this, I remember it well, this green plastic bottle, you know, but it was probably like a half a liter of sandalwood oil. So that was a lot. And he said, Prabhupada, please use it didn't understand the principle of what was going on. So he just thought, you know, you don't have to use the mustard oil on your body. You can use the sandalwood oil on your whole body, because now I've got this big bottle. And Prabhupada said, no, no. He said, that's all right. He said, it's just for the head. And he just kept saying, please, you know, I want you to use it, you know, your whole body. And finally, Prabhupada said, all right. He said, massage me with the sandalwood oil. And I massaged him with the sandalwood oil, and Prabhupada got a cold after using it. And, I mean, we knew, you know, we both, Prabhupada knew, and I knew that mustard oil was for the body. But just because his disciple was so insistent and he wanted him to use the sandalwood oil on his whole body, Prabhupada did it. And he had him use the sandalwood oil to massage his body, sort of remain there throughout the massage. But then the next day he had a little cold from it, because it acts cold on the body. It's actually not a good thing. But and then the rest of the body, of course, he would use the mustard oil, because that was warming and that was good for his constitution. Prabhupada never talked about Ayurveda a whole lot. He would say things that were all Ayurvedic principles, but he didn't say them so much like an Ayurveda. But he would always say what the Ayurvedic principles were. Like I told you the other day, he would take morning sun on his back. And he said, morning sun gives you energy. And the afternoon sun takes away energy. Well, that's basic Ayurvedic principle. And then he would say, you eat your main meal when the sun is highest in the sky. So that means around noontime. That's noontime. So that's when Prabhupada would have his lunch. That's why to this day I always find it very difficult to have khichdi and chapati and sabzis at always 8 o'clock in the morning. Because it works around the temple schedule where they have one meal in the morning and one meal in the evening. But, you know, when being with Prabhupada, what I've always found even growing up was this, you had breakfast. Like Prabhupada would have fruits for breakfast. And then it was cold out, he would add halva. You know, he would say, because when it's cold out, of course you can digest more. You can digest more, you eat more. Which was another parable to say, you eat what you can digest. Because in ISKCON through the years, way back then when Prabhupada was here, we heard all kinds. Prabhupada said this, and Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said you should only have 8 chickpeas at breakfast. You should have 2 chapatis for lunch. And all these things just went around. And Prabhupada was eating 6 chapatis at lunch. He was in his 70s. And they were children, you know. We were in our 20s and we were active all day. But for some reason, these different things, which had a tendency to be very austere, we were being told that this is what Prabhupada said. But Prabhupada said, you should eat whatever you can digest. That's what you should eat. So they eat oils, flowers. There was one time when I'll never, some of the nicest flowers actually, you have them here, you have those little white flowers. What are they?
Champa. Champa.
So they are, they kind of look like small gardenias, but they're real tiny. So I picked them all out at an offering the other day, and just held them in my hand. And Prabhupada, some of his favorites were jasmine, star jasmine flowers. Jasmine is the most wonderful flower, oil, jasmine oil. But, in his garden in Los Angeles, there was a night jasmine. It's called night blooming jasmine, which is probably one of the top, this most fragrant flower. And it's night blooming. That's what it does. In the nighttime, they open up and like straight with lots of flowers in it, with like 8 leaves coming out, like a star jasmine. And he would, in Los Angeles, he would have me bring them those every night. Break off a small branch or a twig, so there were lots of 20 different little flowers all together that would come out first in the evening. So in the evening, I would take a whole little small branch with lots of these jasmine, these night jasmine, and when I would massage him in the evening, he would just lie in bed and he would just put them by his nose. So he would just, every breath, he would just breathe in the jasmine flower very much. And outside, you always appreciate the smell of nice flowers. And I don't know here, but I know in America, even in Europe now, so many of the flowers, although there are roses and there are gardenias, but they have no scent anymore. Just everything is, you know, they've all been cultivated and raised just for looking at, just like the foods, you know, fruits with no taste and vegetables with no taste, but they all look perfect. Everything's about looks, especially in America, so that's how they raise all the crops. But all the flavors are gone. But then they would get gardenias, make these garlands out of gardenia flowers and roses, beautiful red roses. So Prabhupada always, you associated Prabhupada with these smells, like it. So it was, whenever there was even a gardenia, then you would just think of Prabhupada, because he was always, these were like his favorite flowers, gardenias, especially in New York. Have these flowers, and then they would fly these other flowers in from Hawaii, Kaki. They're also very tiny, tiny little white flowers. All these little white flowers, many of them have this wonderful, wonderful fragrances. You know? So they would always get Prabhupada the most fragrant flowers. So he would, you know, he would wear them. You would see Prabhupada, like I said, sometimes he would have garlands on his entire length of his body. You know, they would go down to the ground. But he never seemed to object or mind. I mean, if he had five, six, seven garlands on, he would just keep putting them on. Prabhupada would just accept them and sit there with all these flowers around, these beautiful flower garlands around him. And then in California, there was another tree. There was a tree that bloomed sometimes when Prabhupada was there. A gigantic flower, the magnolias. Magnolia flower, really big leaves, or big petals, big petals, like 8 or 10 petals, and they would be like that big when they expand, and they would make garlands out of these magnolia flowers. You know. And they also, magnolia had a very nice scent. And then there was another flower you could get. It wasn't easy to get, and sometimes they would get them in it's open. Prabhupada would just wait for them to get their concentration ready to accept the cookie from them. And you know, he would place that cookie in his hand and he would smile. So like Krishna Loya said, when she tried to take the cookie because her daughter was so little and just wasn't doing it, and Prabhupada said, no. He said, it's for your daughter. You know, like, he wanted to give it to the child. But, you know, even if others would be sitting there and become a little like, it's getting late now, shot, and others is very happy and to be in that relationship and have that exchange with the youngest of children, you know, the older of children, whatever it was. He was just very happy to have a relationship with them in that way. And in his room, it was the same thing. You know, he could talk to someone. You know, it never felt like Prabhupada was, you know, he never looked at his watch. You know, that's that fateful thing. Somebody looks at their watch. You know, that's not a very good sign, you know, that they're enjoying your company, you know, unless they're catching a flight or something. But it was never that way with Prabhupada. He would talk, and he would talk, and everyone felt he genuinely cared. Prabhupada cared for you, you know. And he could sit there and talk with you until you were content. Maybe you ran out of things to say or to ask, but he was very good. Everyone, all of this time, he was the most wonderful. In 1996, I was at 26 2nd Avenue, and it was the day after Rath Yatra, so we would always have a festival for, and it would be Prabhupada Katha, so all of Prabhupada's disciples were there, they could talk for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I was there that year. New York, 26 2nd Avenue. And one of the devotees, second generation, one of the disciples of a god brother of mine, he said, did Prabhupada treat any of his disciples special? And when he said it, he was thinking that his guru was special. Prabhupada treated him special. And I thought, and I said, yes. I said, all of them. Because that's what Prabhupada did. He made everyone feel special. He felt special. He cared for you. He provided you. Because he did. He treated everyone special. I've been in so many situations where, like in New York, I remember, sometimes it would get really cold in New York. I mean, even though generally it was nice, you could have some winter days that were very, very cold. And sometimes Prabhupada would come down the stairs, walk out these side doors to get in the car. Side walk was there, and then the street, a small street, was right there. So the car would be parked there. Prabhupada would walk down the stairs, and they'd open the door. So there'd always be a dozen and more devotees there. And then a lot of times the brahmacharis would be there. Well, if it was cold out, you would have these brahmacharis there, and they would be in the same outfit that they were in when it was summertime, you know? Like, most of them, they didn't even have a sweatshirt on. And they'd just be like chanting and waving, seeing Prabhupada. And he'd come out the door and like he'd look at Narendra or the president and say, don't they have jackets? Mm-hmm. Like immediately he would see the most obvious thing and say, get them clothes, you see, so that they're warm. You know, just naturally, he would see everyone, all these people, they're taking care of. They're all serving me, they're all helping me. And he just had that desire to see that everyone was taken care of. You know, was, and just in doing that, immediately everyone that was there, they would feel so wonderful. You know, he was our father, you know, he took care of us in that way. And with me traveling with him, those that travel with him, you got to see very practically that he took care of you. He was always seeing that we had clothing, sweaters, and everything. I told you about Atlanta the other day. The Prabhupada stayed in Atlanta for 3 days. So that was another place. We arrived there at the very beginning of March. And Atlanta is not a place that gets very cold, but it happened to be really cold the first few days we were there. And we had just traveled from Bombay to Hawaii, Mexico City, Caracas, all these very warm places. So none of us, myself, Paramahamsa Nitai, we he said he gets some of my socks. And I just said, oh, but I can't wear your socks. You know, spiritual master, you can't wear your socks. He said, if I say you can wear them, he said, it's okay. He said, don't bring my socks. He said, and get some for Nitai and Paramahamsa. Because Prabhupada, everyone was giving to Prabhupada sweaters, chadars, hats, Prabhupada hats, we would call them, all these things. But of course, no one else is giving them to us. You know. So I went and I got all these nice, fluffy saffron socks. And we were all grahasthas, you know, but all the socks were saffron. You know. So I just got a stack of them. So he said, take some for yourself, and he said, take some for Paramahamsa and Nitai. I said, all right. I was actually very happy to take it, but I had to say no initially. So then he looked at me and he said, do you have shoes? Because again, I was walking in sandals, little chappals, Indian chappals, you know, and it was cold. So he said, do you have shoes? And I said, it's my sandals. And he said, here, I just got these shoes. He said, you know, he wore them. He said, but they don't fit. He said, so you take them, see if they fit. And I said, Prabhupada, I said, I can't wear your shoes. And he said, if I say you can wear them, he said, you can wear them. And then he said to me, he said, when the spiritual master, he said, is present, he said, you can use. He said, if he gives you something, he said, it can all be used. He says, but then when he leaves, he said, everything becomes worship. That you never use it, you worship. He said, but while he's here, you can use it. He said, so if I say you can wear the shoes, he said, it's okay. He was convincing me that it was okay. So then I said, yes, Prabhupada. I was actually very happy to get his shoes. So then I had this shoes and this stack of socks like this high, and I went back in to the quarters and with my godbrothers, and he died in Paramahamsa. And as soon as I walked in and they're looking at these things, and I said, look what Prabhupada gave me. I said, all these socks. And they said, you can't wear Prabhupada's socks. I said, you know, he's pure devotee, spiritual master, you can't wear socks. And I said, oh, I said, because some of them are for you too. He said, we gave them to you. And then they went, oh, okay. So then everything changed. Nice saffron socks, and we're all in white all the time with the saffron socks now. And then I said, and he gave me this pair of shoes, you know, to wear, and they were looking, because now they couldn't say anything because they already had the socks. You know, you have to know how to deal with your job brother. So then I sat down on the floor and I put on the socks, and they were like, you know, the nicest socks they ever had, you know. And then I got these shoes, and they were typical Prabhupada canvas shoes, and I tried to put them on. They didn't fit. The Prabhupada had smaller feet, so I was like the ugly stepsister, you know, Cinderella. So even though I wanted them so much because they were Prabhupada's, I figured what could be better than having Prabhupada's shoes? You know, I took everything and turned it. They must be very purifying, but they didn't fit me, so. But this is what it was like to be with him. He was conscious, Prabhupada was conscious and attentive, and he noticed, and he didn't make a big thing out of it, but as soon as we got back, he saw that, you know, we had our socks, we had shoes, we had sweaters, and so many sweaters while I was here. So all these things were, all these going on with Srila Prabhupada. And it was in Los Angeles, and Prabhupada had very nice quarters in Los Angeles. So he had a sitting room, he had another sitting room, and then there was a hallway. So on the left side was the bathroom door, go into his bathroom, and then a little further down there was another door, and that was the servants' quarters, just a small, like, 8x10 room. And it was very simple, and again, you just put your mat down on the floor, and I had a little chudder for sleeping. So same thing there, sometimes in the winter it could be really, really cold there. Cloudy and rainy and cold, and one evening Prabhupada was chanting. He would, in Los Angeles, he would walk around, he would go through his rooms, and then he would walk. So I said, no. And he said, oh, he said, come with me. So I went with him. We went back to his room, his bedroom. And he said, open up the Elmira. So I opened up the Elmira. The Prabhupada's got crocheted blankets in there. You know, somebody crocheted a blanket. There was wool blankets, and there was this big down comforter that was stuffed with down feathers. And so he said, take a blanket. He said, you know, anyone, take a blanket for yourself. So I grabbed the biggest, fluffiest thing I could find, which was the down comforter, and it was orange, like saffron. Orange, it was satin on one side, and the other side was cotton or something. It was very fluffy. I said, is this all right? He said, yes, yes. He said, you have to have a blanket. So I took it, went back to bed, and laid down. Now I had this nice blanket over me. So a few days went by, and Singh Brahmachari, who was bugging me to go to Mangalarti, I told you that about Mangalarti, right? So these Singh friends of mine, they said, why don't you come and sleep in the temple room with us? We sleep in the temple. Because when Prabhupada was there, it was so crowded. A lot of the men would sleep in the temple room. And then, you know, you would get up at 3:30 in the morning and wash the floor or something. Walk the bar, keep us going. So after listening to them for a couple of days, you know, the same thing. You know, does Prabhupada ever need you? And I'd say, no. You know, they always, I was very easily convinced of things. So one night, sleep with us. You know, so I did. So now I brought my straw mat down, and I brought my damn comforter that I just got days ago from Prabhupada. So we're lying on the floor, and they're like, where did you get that? You know? I said, oh, Prabhupada gave it to me. And they're going, really? That was Prabhupada's? And they're like, yeah. And they're just looking. And one of them, I said, do you want it? You know? And he's like, so I gave it to him. So then the next night, I'm back up in my room, and I'm lying on the floor, and I've got the gas heat on again. And Prabhupada walks by in the middle of the night, and he looks at me, and you know, I wake up, and he said, where's your blanket? So I told him what happened. I said, I was, you know, I said, some of my godbrothers, they saw it, and I gave it to one of them. And he just shook his head. He said, come with me. So I went with him and went back to his bedroom. He said, open up the Elmira. And I opened it up. He said, take a blanket. He said, and don't give it away. I said, yes, Prabhupada. And I grabbed another blanket. I went back. I left it. I couldn't. I just, you know, couldn't. I always delete things. That's my like on the computer. I delete before I do anything. I delete. That's what I did. I was always minimizing. Whatever Prabhupada gave me, it eventually ended up with someone else because I would give things away. So that also got given away a little later. But I kept it the whole time while we were there in Los Angeles. It was so wonderful. It was so funny. So Siddhasarup, we were talking about Siddha. Because this happened in New Zealand now, which is just next door to Australia and New Zealand. So before I came to Australia with Prabhupada, we were in New Zealand. And at that time, in New Zealand were these two sannyasis, Siddhasarup and Tushtakrishna Maharaj. He came with Siddha. He was one of Siddha's boys when Siddha joined his con. So now they were both sannyasis. And when Prabhupada went, this was in Auckland, he stayed at the temple there, which was actually like a house. And all the devotees, they moved out of the house while Prabhupada was there. So it was just the two of them, myself, and that was pretty much it. Madhavisa only brought over myself and Bhavinder Dhan at the time, like he did secretarial. Because at that time, getting tickets to Australia and New Zealand was very expensive. So anyway, I was in the house with Prabhupada at the servants' quarters where I stayed. And when they were there, Prabhupada would give them, which was unusual, Prabhupada gave them lots of association. And even in the evening while he took prasadam, they would stay in the room. And sometimes Prabhupada would talk while he was having puris and sabji. At 73, he was eating a lot of puris at nighttime. So, you know, just like now, when you travel there, was our first evening there, and both of these fellas, these devotees, they were very, very health conscious, and they were not into white sugar, white flour, sort of things which were plentiful in this kind of state. Everything had sugar, you know, like lots and lots of sugar. But they didn't, you know, they ate very healthy. They ate lots of fresh fruit, even raw kind of diet. So the first evening, Prabhupada called me in his room. He said, so you can make some puris and sabji, hot milk. So I went into the kitchen and made them puris, made them vegetables, and they were in the room, Siddha and Krishna Krishna. So I brought it in and put it down. The same thing, you just bring one puri, you know, with the sabji, and then you put down the plate and offer obeisances. Come back into the kitchen, roll another puri and fry it. Right, you just bring puris one at a time. They were hot. Again, they had to puff up all the way. So after three or four puris, he looked at me and he said, isn't there any sandesh? And I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, I didn't have the ingredients. He said, no. He said, that's okay. Like he wasn't chastising me. He said, just bring me a bowl of sugar. So I went back into the kitchen and you know, I got a little puri, and I put a few tablespoons of sugar in. And then I, you know, went back in and said, get me some puris. So I rolled some more puris and I came back. So he was taking the hot puris and he was just pushing it into the sugar hammer. Just eating chini puri. And these sannyasis were looking at it. Because this was just sugar. It wasn't even a sweet. It was just plain white sugar, which like to them was, you know, it was poison. White sugar. And that's what they'll say, like so many people say white sugar. But Prabhupada was just pushing these puris into the sugar and just eating them, you know. So I knew what they were. So I was just sitting there and I was just laughing to myself, thinking Prabhupada was so funny, because it's almost why he did things sometimes was just the shock value of it. Because even Prabhupada knew his disciples very, very well. He knew all of their functions and dysfunctions and everything about them. So he would do things sometimes just for the fun of it. And this similar thing happened in Laguna Beach, where the deities were there. Now Prabhupada always, he would take hot milk at night. And sometimes I would say, you know, you want sugar or honey. And he would say, you know, it doesn't matter. And a lot of times I would use honey. And the same thing, the first time he said, put honey in it. And I said, well, I said, Prabhupada, isn't honey, you know, poison, you know, like oil of milk? And he'd say, just put the honey in it. He said, that's all right, don't worry. This is how he trained me. Prabhupada, this is why, this is my excuse for why I'm like I am. He was always saying, don't worry about it. He said, just put the honey in it. So I put the honey in it. So now we're in Laguna Beach, which just was a whole other. Not only didn't they have white sugar, they didn't have honey, you know, they didn't have, they practically ate raw food, you know, they were eating like alfalfa sprouts and mung bean sprouts and all these kinds of things. They were very healthy, food conscious. This was 1973. So Prabhupada asked for milk, and he said with sugar. And he never said with sugar, he would just say hot milk, but he specifically asked for sugar. So, of course, I went into the kitchen, the temple kitchen, the eating kitchen. There was only one kitchen in those days. You didn't have mouths. Some temples, they have the eating kitchen, devotee kitchen. But there was just a kitchen. So I went in, I boiled the milk, and I'm looking around. There's no white sugar. I said, you know, he said, do you have any sugar? And he looked at me like, no, there's honey there. So, of course, I put the honey into it. I just brought it into Prabhupada, and milk was very, very hot. Prabhupada took hot milk. It meant really hot. You had to boil it. If you could carry the cup and you went into the room, he would say it's not hot enough. The devotee brought it in and Prabhupada said, no, it's not hot enough. He said, how do you know, Prabhupada? He brought it in. He said, you're holding the cup. But if you could hold the cup, it meant it wasn't hot enough. You boiled it. You can't. So the middle, and I just put it down. I didn't say anything. And I sat down, and so immediately took a sip. And he said, I told you to put sugar in it right away, because honey has a very different from sugar. And I said, oh, I said, oh, they don't have any sugar here in the kitchen. And he looked at me, he said, what do you mean they don't have sugar? I said, well, they don't use sugar because they think sugar is not healthy. He said they have TVs here. He said, you have to have sugar. He said, how can they make sweets without sugar? How can they make sweets for the Krishna? He said, they may not want sugar. He said, but Krishna has to have sugar. Just like the song says, Chini Pum Shukti, Krishna must have sugar, he said. Whether they have sugar or not, he said, that's another thing. He said, but you have to give it to Krishna. But he knew it was going on. But like that was his way of bringing it out, by asking. He would test things. And he would draw a conclusion from one thing. He would know the state of a temple by how the deity was being served. Many would understand that. He would draw like way bigger conclusions from it. Like in Mexico City, he did the same thing. When we arrived in Mexico City, he said, bring me Rajbhog for lunch. The deity's Rajbhog offering. And it was the first thing he did when he arrived there. And the whole trip there, BBC was telling about, they translated all these books into Spanish BBT, so many books, which this was the most important thing to Prabhupada, that his books were being distributed, being translated into different languages. So the whole ride from the airport to the temple, he's telling him about all these accomplishments with his books, Prabhupada's book. And Prabhupada just sat there in the car, and he didn't really say anything. He just sat in the car. And as soon as he arrived at the temple, he said, bring me the Rajbhog offering. So they brought him the offering. Here's Radhakrishna there, Buenapira. So everyone's in the room, GBC, temple president, I'm in half a dozen devotees. And this was not what Prabhupada did. He would sit by himself.
72?
This was 75. You know. But he was there. All these devotees are in the room with I bring in the Rajbhog offerings on the deity's plate and sat it down in front of Prabhupada. As soon as he put it down, Prabhupada picked up the puri and he went, who has made these puris? They were terrible. They could not even puff up. And then he took a spoonful of dal and he said, this dal is like mud. It was always his expression, the dal wasn't good, it was like mud. He said, who is cooking? He said, this is for the deity. Everything must be first class. So he just turned everything around. Was, you know, all this emphasis was about the books, printing the books, translating books into Spanish and distributing his books. And Prabhupada just completely ignored all of it. And as soon as he went to the temple, he went after them because they weren't taking care of the deities. And that's when he could understand everything. And this morning, now, he was giving prasad. And Prabhupada, for one thing, he would understand everything. So if the deities were being served nicely, consciousness was. And he said the same thing. He said, if books are going out, then it means everything else is fit in the temple. Well, from it means everything had to go on. Nothing was less important. In fact, there was one sannyasi wrote Prabhupada a letter and said, Radha Damodar party, they were distributing so many books. He said, you know, he was doing this other service. He said, so should I do do that because it's more important, you know, because Prabhupada said it. And Prabhupada said, everything is most important. He said, book distribution is most important. He said, in deity worship is most important. The temple is most important. He said, nothing is less important. He said, in Krishna consciousness, everything is most important. And this is the way Prabhupada would speak. When he said something was most, it didn't mean other things were less. It meant it was most important. Activity, you know, was most important. But it didn't mean in the other things that you had peace, you know, that's more and most. Everything he said is most important. So this is looking at the deities, you could have conversations with Krishna. So I don't know, maybe that's what would happen. Krishna would just say, you know, they're giving me these puris and all the things, and it's terrible. I want nicer prasad. I want nicer offerings. So, in any event, Prabhupada always knew when to say and when to ask for it. Because he didn't ask for it and say, oh, this is, I never heard him say, this is very wonderful. He would always say, this is very bad. In this way, he was only getting us to improve and become conscious, Krishna conscious of what he was doing. Because if you please Krishna,